This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. In BC, ladies and gentlemen, tune into AMI Audio, Nova's channel 889, and around the country, Rogers Ignite channel 146. Visit ami.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area. I'm Kelly McDonald, host of Kelly and Company. We're here weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. First repeat of the show at 5 p.m. midnight and 5 a.m. in the morning Eastern time. My co-host, Ramya Muthan, at our home studio in Toronto.
We're always previewing something really good on AMI TV, and we do this with our friends from AMI TV every Monday. And today we're looking at an original feature called In Focus, and this is hosted by Laura Bain in Halifax, and we know our friend's up to some real cool stuff at the moment. But she asks the question in this documentary, how do you describe your disability? So that's going to be the focus, and there's a lot of stuff that comes into focus with that, Kels. But we have two guests today joining us to preview, and one of them is Wendy Purvis, a producer in Halifax, and Michelle McQuigg of the Canadian Press, who appears in this feature with lots of interesting things to say. Wendy and Michelle, thank you for coming on Kelly Co.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it was almost a jinx, guys. So let's
talk. Look at that Volkswagen Wendy. Just went by.
Michelle and I are so in sync.
We love it. So let's start with some general overview of the documentary. Wendy, if you can give us kind of a preview of what this is about.
Well, it's a half hour, and like you said, hosted by Laura, and it's sort of a primer on some of the biggest controversies and discussions surrounding disability language. So we've tackled it by having Laura interview a couple of writers and disability activists, and to talk about sort of language, and then she did a story called Crip Hop Nation, and that's about an organization in the U.S. Where they are using reclaiming language. And then, of course, Michelle McQuigg from the Canadian Press talks about disability language in the Canadian news media. So that's sort of an overview of the half hour.
Enter stage left, Michelle McQuigg. Michelle, you appeared in the doc to talk a little bit about language and disability in the Canadian news media. You've been a reporter and now editor with the Canadian Press for over a decade. What changes have you seen when it... what changes have you seen in disability when it comes to language? And some people would probably say, you know, kind of maybe I'm intimating something with the age thing there, but no ageism, folks.
Fair enough. It actually has been quite an interesting phenomenon to witness from the perspective of a working journalist. Because when I first started in the industry, at that recent moment, right, this was not really on the radar very much, and it didn't get a lot of time. And there was deep consideration of issues like whether people preferred person first or identity first language. Mm-hmm. There definitely was not a lot of scrutiny around terms like, you know, being confined to a wheelchair or referring to things as, you know, if COVID-19 had happened when I began my career, for instance, terms like crippling the economy might not have gotten a lot of discussion within the newsroom. That's not really the case anymore. Those conversations are happening, and it's being driven a lot by the disability community, who have gotten very vocal and have really mobilized in recent years. I want to say 5 to 7 or 8 years where this has been put on the radar. And those of us who've had the privilege of covering disability issues, and that it's not that many of us, but those who have really witnessed these kinds of things coming to the fore, and it really can't help but shape the journalism that we were producing as a result.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious if we can put you in the spotlight for just a second, if you're willing, to talk about identity first and person first. You know,
sure.
I want to say one versus the other, but, you know, the preference of when it comes to those ways of describing and self-describing. And I'm curious what you use in your work or personally or just your thoughts in general.
In my work, I have to ask the interview subject what the preference is. There's a really good argument to be made, and it does come up in the documentary, that there's space for both, and there isn't really a right or wrong answer. So I ask the interview subjects what they would prefer to be referenced as, and I respect that wish in what I actually write. For my own use, this might be a controversial opinion. I don't feel as passionately about this as some people might expect me to. I don't get terribly wound up about either. But if I was asked to pick, I would probably go with identity first language, just because I am somewhat allergic to political correctness, and that has connotations when you use person first language for me. That is not the case for everyone. But if asked if I object to the term disabled, I certainly don't. And I'd rather just call something a spade, if that's what it is.
In the documentary, you guys talk about words that kind of make people go and cringe and get creepy. Wendy, what words came up in the documentary?
Well, some of the words that you would probably expect, inspirational, of course, differently abled, special needs, living with language, and even things like autism spectrum disorder. Some people do not prefer that. They prefer to be called autistic. So it was really, there were some themes, I would say, there on certain words, but it was kind of all over the place a little bit.
There was one great example too of handy capable. And I
yeah. Yeah, there's a spinning into a more optimistic point of view thing going on, right? Well, with the disability community.
And it changes constantly. And because you could talk to somebody, the same people in 8 months, and they'll have added something else to the lexicon they either like or don't like.
Sure. But going back to, Michelle, what you were saying about asking for personal preference and asking for self-descriptions before jumping the gun and saying, well, this person identifies as dot, 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 or not even saying it that way, right? Because everybody has, obviously, their own way of doing it, and things that might really rub someone the wrong way that doesn't really rub us the wrong way, or you or anybody.
Exactly. For instance, there are some people who vehemently object to being described as a person with a disability. They're very passionate about having identity first language and would really resist if I insisted that that was our style and that was the way it was going to work. And they probably wouldn't even talk to me in that case. Others feel the exact opposite and blanch at the word disabled and feel that that sells themselves short. They don't like it. They don't like the connotations. The documentary does a great job of presenting all those different perspectives. So I'm fortunate that we have the latitude at Canadian Press to be able to honor people's preferences in interviews the way we would, let's say, if we ask about their pronouns when we're doing an interview. Mm-hmm.
When I was doing interviews for TV, and of course here, you kind of want to just simply say to the person, how do you identify? How do you want to be called? What is the title that you best use? I'm assuming you guys have been encouraged as reporters, or the reporters are encouraged at your shop, of how they would describe themselves.
Oh, for sure. Laura does that. And that's what I, coming to AMI, that's what I learned to do. I don't know if I was doing that beforehand. And yeah, that's something we always do. Even though I think our corporate language is more person with a disability, but we leave it up to the person to decide what. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised in the documentary. I thought we were all moving towards more identity first, because I guess because I'm following a lot of activists on, you know, social media. But through the documentary, I learned, and through Laura's discussions with the panelists, that the idea that it can go either way, like it just depends on the person. That was a learning thing for me, mm-hmm. certainly.
And I think that's the thing. We all have our own feeling, and it depends who you're talking to. So you have to build in the ways of which to get that information, because some people are going to be, well, I don't really worry about it. Whatever is easiest for you. And some are going to be very, no. Michelle, I'm assuming that's the way Canadian Press handles it with the reporters as well. Just ask, don't be shy, because that's mostly people's problem. I don't want to insult anyone by asking the wrong thing.
Well, exactly. It's sort of the kind of basic information that we need to gather. We need to be accurate when we present everything from the spelling of someone's name to their pronoun choice, like I said before, and this is part of the package. And especially if you are talking about disability-related issues, this is on the radar anyhow. So it would be remiss not to have that conversation and to try and respect their choice.
Wendy, you mentioned earlier in the interview here, Crip Hop Nation. Tell us about them.
Oh, yeah. I was really happy to learn about them, even though they've been around for over a decade, too. Crip-Hop Nation, it's a collective or network of hip-hop musicians and artists with disabilities who are using language as a tool of empowerment, self-expression, and activism. And Laura spoke to one of the co-founders. And listeners might be familiar with their music if they watch the Netflix 2020 documentary on Paralympians called Rising Phoenix. Crip-Hop artists wrote and performed that theme song for that documentary. But they're an included, that's Crip, they're Crip-Hop Nation with a K. They're doing work around the world trying to get, you know, their artists out there and get them heard by the music industry and, you know, being activists in their own rights for disability rights and language.
That's amazing.
Very nice.
Yeah. Well,
they're super cool.
This whole conversation.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. This whole conversation, this discussion is, you know, really we're at the tip of the iceberg. I'm so curious to see some of the other interviews and conversations that Laura had on In Focus, the documentary. So thank you both for coming on and previewing it. And before we go, Wendy, where can we tune in and when can we tune in?
In Focus is airing April 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV.
Awesome.
Check it out. They did a great job with it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michelle.
Quite excited. It's going to be fun.
Take care, both of you, and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you
so much. Stay safe, everybody.
Thank you. Michelle McQuigg of the Canadian Press and Wendy Purvis, our producer in Halifax, Nova Scotia, joining us to preview In Focus. And this is a documentary with your host, Laura Bain.
When we return for hour two of Kelly and Company, we learn about a building navigation system that empowers users about how to navigate indoors independently. Danielle McLaughlin and her guests, Arch staff lawyer Jessica Damaris and co-counsel Mariam Shemuda, share an important disability rights case that was decided by the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario. Up next, though, Bill Shackleton joins us for the final Monday Buzz. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.